Good morning. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenson for Kate Archer Kent. It's one of Wisconsin's largest and most diverse counties. Today, we're going to Kenosha County to meet the new county executive. Her name is Samantha Kirkman, and she's made history as the first woman to lead the county. She left the legislature after more than 22 years and took office just 3 weeks ago. What do you think are the biggest issues facing Kenosha? We'd love to hear from you. We're at 1-800-642-1234, ideas@wpr.org. Samantha Kirkman, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Molly. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. So you're the first woman to hold this position in the 40-some years since it was established, and that means you'll be leaving the legislature. Why move from state government to county government?
Well, and it's such a unique transition because I'm still holding both roles right now for the next, you know, month and a half here as I transition out of Madison. And Madison has given me the opportunity to learn and to listen and to, you know, meet, you know, everybody in Kenosha County. So it was a great place to get my feet wet. And now I'm going to bring that experience, you know, to this role as county exec. I worked closely with the previous, county exec on many issues. I worked with him both in the legislature and, you know, in his role as county exec. I have strong relationships currently with the current legislative delegation that represents Kenosha County at the state level and at the federal level. So I'm looking forward to using my experience in a different role now to represent Kenosha County as the county exec. And it's very exciting. There have only been 6 women, actually, throughout the state to hold the role of elected county execs. So there's 12 currently elected county execs throughout the state. The other counties, you know, have the county board chair as their leader, usually with the county administrator. So it is a pretty special group of folks who lead their counties.
Right. You're a trailblazer. So you're moving from legislating, though, to governing. You know, this is...
Correct.
Like most local government, nonpartisan. How are you going to approach running the county?
Well, again, I've already, you know, kind of hit the ground running here in the last couple of weeks. The previous county exec and I had a 2-week transition where he brought in many of the administrators and the directors to get schooled up on the programs that the county was running, their budgets, and meeting people. I also did some pop-ins on my own and just, you know, stopping in at different, facilities and meeting the employees. You know, Kenosha County has just shy of 1,100 employees that run and keep the operations going. And so it is my goal to get out there and do a lot of hands-on meetings and meetings with constituents and doing things I would like to do Saturday mornings in the park with Sam in the summertime and, you know, at the parks, get people out, seeing what beautiful, little assets we have in Kenosha County that they might not have been aware of. And then, you know, work on the budget as I take input from constituents, because that will start in the fall. And so that's the big responsibility that the county exec has to do.
Sure. Well, another big responsibility is public safety, right? And homicides have more than doubled last year in Kenosha County. You said you plan to work with the sheriff and local police to reduce crime. What needs to happen?
Well, and I've, you know, again, the sheriff and I have already had some conversations. I've also reached out to our local police chiefs in the area, and I want to sit down and have a roundtable discussion. What are we doing? What are we seeing? What types of crime are we seeing in the county? And how can we, you know, focus our resources towards trying to combat those issues. High-speed chases seem to be very one of the things that you hear about as, you know, constituents have talked to me. We have major thoroughfares like, you know, with the interstate, but we also have Green Bay Road and some state highways in which people travel through to go either north or south, so either to Milwaukee or to Chicago. So that's where a lot of those chases are happening. And, you know, really endangering public safety here.
So is this an issue that can be solved at the county level?
Well, with the sheriff's department, correct. I mean, you have to work closely. In Kenosha County, we will be getting a new sheriff. Dave Beth, our current sheriff, is retiring as well. after 20 years. And so in August, we'll have a primary and then the general election in November. So I think people are really talking about it because it's going to be something that's really prevalent this election cycle.
Yeah. We're speaking with Samantha Kirkman this morning. She was the first woman elected Kenosha County executive. Well, I want to ask you, too, about the opioid epidemic. Last year, the majority of drug-related deaths in Kenosha County involved fentanyl. I understand the county's now supplying fentanyl testing strips to some people. People are receiving Narcan training. Will those help reduce overdoses?
Well, and this is where my role as state representative intersects with the county exec position. Last session, we passed a bill to legalize the fentanyl testing strips. As you mentioned, the overdoses have skyrocketed here in Kenosha County. And, you know, it's because the drugs are coming up from the north and the south, and folks are, you know, using drugs that are laced with fentanyl and not realizing that this is a way to let folks know that they're, if they are going to be using drugs, to make sure that it doesn't have fentanyl. So I've been working with our public health director and our behavioral health administrators. Last weekend, I participated with the Drug Take Back Day in our county. And last year, Wisconsin led the way just behind Texas for the amount of drugs that we collected and were able to dispose of safely. So during that event, we actually did Narcan training and handed out testing strips to people. And I'll give an example. A dad came and his daughter's, you know, attending college, and he is worried about her. And so he came and got tested for, or got the training for Narcan and the test strips to be very familiar and try to, you know, learn some of the symptoms and things that he should be watching out for if his daughter is using. So those are the types of outreach that we're trying to do to try to be preventative. Also then working with our public health partners to try to bring information to try to get folks to not use drugs in the first place. And how can we do that and work together? This is where I want to work with other communities, other counties, to find out what's working.
Do you have the resources you need to adequately address the problem?
Well, this is where you sit down with the director of our human services department. I have commissioned and received some of the information and where we're spending our dollars right now. Our budgets are an annual cycle. So this is over the summer. This is where we're going to look to see what has been working, what hasn't been working, and how can we, if we need more resources, try to bring in more resources. The human services budget is just over $100 million. Most of that comes from state and federal partners. So again, if we are leading the way, and I asked this question last weekend, do we get more than other counties do to help us combat it? And, you know, in a number of cases we do. So again, it's using those resources that we're getting in a way that tries to prevent the issue from even happening. And that's really what I want to look at, is the prevention program. How can we get in there, get the information to our young people to not even use drugs? That is so important. I have two boys. They're in high school. They're 16 and 14. And I look to them as, you know, the population that I'm trying to help not go down that path.
Right. We're speaking with Samantha Kirkman, the newly elected Kenosha County executive. She was just elected in April after serving more than 20 years in the state assembly. You can join in. 1-800-642-1234. Stay with us on The Morning Show. I'm Molly Stentz. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're speaking with Kenosha County Executive Samantha Kirkman. She was elected in April after serving the state legislature for more than two decades. What are the biggest challenges Kenosha faces today? You can join in. 1-800-642-1234. You can always email us, ideas@WPR.org. Well, Samantha, we've got a call coming in. I want to go next to Dawn in Kenosha joining us this morning. Good morning, Dawn. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Good morning, Sam. Congratulations, longtime supporter. I'm very curious as to what plans you may help put in place so that if Kenosha County and the city of Kenosha have issues with more riots that we had 2 years ago, I feel the former county exec and our sheriff and our mayor did nothing to protect property and people within the city.
Well, this is where we need to work together. Like I said, public safety is a huge issue, and I talked about it all the time. And it could be from those, you know, high-speed chases, but to more significant events like the riots that we faced in 2020. And this is where having those relationships, communicating right away that we need help. There should have been no time between what the events had started to calling and asking for additional resources through the governor and through, you know, our federal government more quickly than we did. We have faced crises before in Kenosha County. I always go back, I bring up 2020, but there were flooding in 2017 where Fox River and many other areas of the county were impacted so greatly by traumatic floods in July. And we needed more help and more resources right away. To help us, help our first responders who were out trying to help people get their belongings out of their house and everything, and just keeping people safe. And so as county exec, this is one of those things where, you know, seeing what the problem is and immediately acting and working together with either, you know, the city of Kenosha or whatever community is impacted by whatever event might come our way. And this is something that I've done in my time in the legislature, but wore a different hat, and now as county exec, again, working very closely with our emergency government and our law enforcement partners, our federal, state, and local partners together.
Do you, and thanks, Dawn, for the call this morning. County Executive Kirkman, I wonder, do you think, could that issue happen again, where you have a police shooting in your county of a citizen, and then this huge outcry? Could you see that happening again?
I don't want it to happen again, first off. And again, hopefully, you know, working with, you know, our law enforcement partners, there's more training, enhanced things. And again, just the community in general. So something like that doesn't happen. And we don't have to handle that. But again, if there is, this is where we want to work together to help keep our community safe.
Yeah. Well, I also want to ask you about development in Kenosha. So there's in the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, I understand that the city is converting the site of the Chrysler engine plant to this big project to focus on workforce training, job placement. What's the county's role in that project?
Well, the city has taken the lead. Obviously, it's their property. They own it right now. Again, it's been a lot of state, federal resources that have gone into cleaning up that particular site. You know, the mayor's vision there is to really, you know, have the Innovation Center with the partner of the school district. There's another building nearby that site. It's called the Brown Bank Building, which they're redeveloping right now. It's got great bones in it to bring in the services to those communities. There's six communities around that neighborhood that are very challenged. I, over the last summer, have been trying to go out and reach and talk to people in informal ways to get feedback on what really is needed in those neighborhoods to help lift people up bring, as we talked about, economic development is something that Kenosha County, we are just leading the way here in Wisconsin. We've added more than 12,000 jobs in the last 10 years. Very proud of that because at the state level, I've helped to bring through WEDIC. We've been partners many times to help companies locate here in Kenosha County or expand. I mean, we have longtime community businesses like Snap-on and Jockey who've made a commitment to staying here, expanding here, and being here for the future. So the Kin neighborhood, Jockey is actually right next door to where that property is. And so they've been very proactive to trying to work with the mayor on what the vision for that area is. But then again, bringing in community stakeholders and the community itself. What does the community want? And I think that is so critical.
And does the county have enough affordable housing for the workforce that well, you'd be attracting here?
Well, and that is where those conversations with our the stakeholders, the housing community is so important. There are some communities in Western Kenosha County, they do not want any growth whatsoever. And there are other communities that have the ability to grow and add housing to it. Somebody was telling me a figure, and I haven't been able to verify it yet, that 12 years ago, roughly 13 years ago, we had more than 800 housing starts, you know, construction permits were given in a year. Now it's down to about 200 or 300 building permits in a year. So those are really striking numbers to me that I haven't, you know, I'm trying to dive in deep to figure out what, you know, why were there so many given 12 years ago and not as many today. I know the land availability, the cost of land is very, very high, and developers, there's a lot of expenses that go into to bring in housing developments into to a particular neighborhood or area.
Yeah, is there a role for the county to play? I mean, can you incentivize developers to build more affordable workforce housing?
And this is where you partner with the state and federal government. So yes, there are programs that are available in certain developers do seek out to use those programs that are already on the books and how to make them more affordable so we can get housing that people can afford. The cost of land has just gone up. That's a huge challenge. It's a good challenge, but it's a huge challenge when you're trying to buy, a starter home, you know, for a family who, you know, mom and dad are both working now, you know, so they have that pride in the neighborhood. And you know, I do say that really does help strengthen the neighborhood is when people have home ownership. So in those kin neighborhoods or near kin, that is really important too, is trying to strengthen those neighborhoods where people, you know, through programs like Habitat for Humanity and other community partner programs, where people can realize their dream. And those are really important. I've been participating with them. If there is a way for the county to help participate or just be a supporter of those programs that are already going on. So not duplicating services, but helping those that are trying and already doing the programs.
Yeah. And is that where you see most of the development happening? I mean, do you imagine that most of the development in Kenosha is going to occur in the city as opposed to the more rural parts of the county?
Well, again, it's probably layered. You know, you have the city of Kenosha, but then you have Summers and Pleasant Prairie that have many housing starts. Bristol as well, which are closest to the interstate. But then you have some of the more rural communities like the town of Paris and the town of Brighton, which have very strict housing, zoning and planning standards in those communities. So, again, trying to support those communities and what they want for their future. And again, being very proactive in reaching out. And that's where you have to, as county exec, being out and listening to people, what do they want for their community and where do they see it going forward in the future?
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with newly elected Kenosha County Executive Samantha Kirkman. And before we have to let you go, I want to ask you as a recently elected official, you know, we've been watching this review of the 2020 election, and I wonder how much confidence you have currently in the integrity of Wisconsin elections.
And this is where I tell people to get involved in the process, learn about the process, become a poll worker, be a poll observer. To be a poll worker, you have to reside in the county in which you're a poll worker. Reach out to your local county parties, either Republican or Democrat, sign up to be a poll worker through them, and work in your community to really help the process and learn the process. Again, just being on the ballot, winning by just over 800 votes, it's something that it is the foundation of our government. If people don't have trust and faith in our election process, it's something that will impact us going forward. So I really hope people, you know, become involved and see the process for themselves. And try to help out their clerks.
Should we have this review? Should it continue?
I believe review is always good. You know, being the co-chair of the Joint Audit Committee in Madison for 20 years, being on the committee for 20 years and being the co-chair of the last 12, I believe audits are always good to take a look at things, to look at them from a different perspective, ask some difficult questions. So again, just like many other state programs that have audited over the years, elections should be looked at and reviewed. And again, this is where people should get involved at their local level, really pay attention to what the clerks are doing. They do a great job in helping out that way. So.
Well, that's all the time we have this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
We've been speaking with newly elected Kenosha County Executive Samantha Kirkman. Up next is news and a story of our Wisconsin life. Then we'll hear from Eau Claire-based musician Sean Carey. I'm Molly Stentz. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story in honor of Mother's Day.
An ode to the bedtime story. It comes to us from WPR's Jenny Peek, who wanted to pay tribute to one of her favorite activities as a new mom. She tells us how becoming a parent reignited a love for the children's books she had been missing since she was a little girl.
Here, lean back.
Oh.
Tucked into bed with a world in your head as we cuddle and turn down the light. Where will you go when the stars start to glow? Tell me, what will you dream of tonight? Drifting away at the end of the day as the spellbinding sun disappears. What will you choose? You have nothing to lose because anything's possible here. What Will You Dream Of Tonight by Frances Stickley is one of my son Liam's favorite bedtime stories. Its pages unleash a world of fantasy. Treasure guarded by a fierce dragon, wintry treks under a rainbow of northern lights, a rocket ship guided by stars for the taking. As I read it to him, he sits nestled on my lap in the gray rocking chair that sits in the corner of his nursery. A dim overhead light and pink Himalayan salt lamp illuminate the pages. I can feel his soft breath and little heartbeat patter with the rhythm of the cadence of my words. He points out the moon, the little propeller plane soaring over the desert night sky, the cat creeping along the branch of a dark tree. It's my favorite place to be, and I hope it's one of his too.
You might take a ride down a waterfall slide as you glide through a tropical sky and swing past the leaves on a jungle trapeze. You are free, you are fast, you can fly.
I always wanted to be a mom. Caretaking comes naturally, and it fills me up in more ways than I can describe. But one of the greatest joys of my journey into parenthood has been my rediscovery of children's books. I devoured them growing up. When I was 4 years old, I wanted to be a children's book author, an illustrator. But as I got older, the books got longer, and the pages lost their color. When the sonogram showed a tiny beating heart, and testing later confirmed we were expecting a healthy little boy, I started to imagine all of the things we would need to welcome him into our world. Bassinet, stroller, car seat, diapers, and books. Lots of books. Titles I recognized and ones that were new to me filled our baby registry. I went through rubber bins stacked to the brim with my old storybooks. I remembered laying in bed, my head on my mom's shoulder as she read the familiar words over and over again.
Good night, room. Good night, moon. Good night, cow jumping over the moon. Good night, light in the red balloon. Good
night. I think about my blanket Blue Blue tucked under one arm and Brownie the teddy bear tucked under the other, safe and warm. What a joy to be able to relive that feeling. Now I get to pass that sense of place onto Liam, all while escaping into the world of adventure. A world of bears missing buttons, trains that think they can, a sea of rainbow fish and hippos going berserk. It makes me wonder why I ever stopped reading these beloved books in the first place, and reminds me to never stop again.
Now cuddle up tight and we'll whisper goodnight as we drift into darkening skies. And I promise I'll stay just a heartbeat away. I'll be here when you open your eyes. So tucked into bed with a world in your head and a ceiling of stars up above, wherever you go, I just want you to know you are safe, you are home, you are loved.
That Ode to Bedtime Stories was brought to us by WPR's Jenny Peek.
Mama.
And her son, Liam.
Can you say, I love you?
Wisconsin Life.
Thank you. Life.
Is a co-production of PBS Wisconsin and Wisconsin Public Radio.
London, Baker. Radio.
In partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum. Thanks, Liam.
You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Molly Stenz. We turn now to the Eau Claire-based musician S. Carey. He is out with a new album called Break Me Open. You may know Sean Carey as a member of the band Bon Iver. This album is his first in more than 4 years, and we're catching up with him on the road on tour for the album. Sean, welcome to The Morning Show.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I want to begin where you begin, with Dark, a song expressing your feelings toward your children. Let's take a listen.
No, it won't suffice to tell you that I love you among my deepest fears.
Sean, how do you approach writing about such personal experiences?
Well, it's difficult at times, but it's something that I, at least on this record, felt that I needed to do. So, that song is just about, you know, being a parent and thinking about, I guess, if I ever lost one of my kids, what that would feel like. And that's the song that came out.
Well, and I understand that you lost your father recently.
True.
And that he was a music teacher.
He was, yes. He was an elementary music teacher. Yep.
I mean, what do you think he taught you about your love for music?
Oh, man. Music to him was a joyful experience, which to me it often is. He taught me how to you know, find my own voice and he loved all sorts of kinds of music and always was one of my biggest supporters. So
do you hope to inspire the same love of music in your children?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm still in the, they're young enough where I don't want to push them to do anything.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I try to like set up instruments for them to just explore. I have my oldest is taking piano lessons now and my son is playing drums. And so, I think it would be so awesome if they had a little family band once they get a little bit older.
And so it's been more than 4 years since the release of your last album, 100 Acres. Why make this album now?
Oh, well, it, you know, the past 2 years for everyone, for all humans, has been, you know, quite different and heavy and hard and in many different ways. And I just feel like sharing my music with people is something that I know that is important to me and to music fans. And it felt, you know, it's just like something that I need to do. And it's important right now to look to art, to get inspiration, to understand things, to, you know, look at your own feelings. And it's, yeah, it's many layers, but.
Yeah. Well, what did the pandemic mean for you? I mean, imagine like so many musicians without touring, must have been hard.
Yeah, it was, you know, honestly, I loved not traveling. I loved being home. Now that I am touring, it, you know, it feels good, but it definitely made me appreciate home a little bit more. It made me, you know, really focus in on being a father, and it really represented a lot of change for me. So a lot of that change, really comes through in the music on this new record.
Yeah. One of the themes I noticed in your music, you talk a lot about the environment. And I wonder, from your childhood in Eau Claire and in Arizona, what is it? What is your connection to the natural world that inspires you?
Yeah, I mean, I actually grew up in Lake Geneva, but Wisconsin sure, for life. But I don't know, it's hard to even put into words, but I think, you know, I've just always had that connection. Always loved being outside. My dad especially was really into, besides music, was really into camping and fishing. So he lived in Arizona for most of my life. And, you know, when we would see him, it would be, you know, his house would be base camp, and then we would go out on all these trips and adventures and explore the Southwest and camp and fish and national parks and that whole thing. And that was, it was always a super exciting and memorable time for me every year.
We're speaking with the Eau Claire-based artist Sean Carey about his music and his new album. You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Molly Stentz, and you're listening to The Morning Show. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're listening to Waking Up from the new album Break Me Open by Sean Carey, who goes by S. Carey. Good morning to all of you waking up this morning. We're speaking with Sean about his new album, and you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Well, Sean, I want to talk about the song Break Me Open, the title track from the album. Let's take a listen. The song Break Me Open by S. Carey. Sean, what does that song mean to you?
Oh, it's all about vulnerability and just sort of something that I took away from the pandemic and the changes in my life was just to try to live more vulnerably. I think it's one of the most important things as a human that we can do, and beautiful things. And so that's kind of what that song's about.
Yeah. What was how did you find inspiration and creativity over the past few years as we've all been looking for ways to deal with the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it came at certain times, and you know, for the first year maybe or 9 months, I didn't feel creative. I guess I was just storing it up. But you know, that song specifically, I remember I was sitting under an oak tree and just kind of thinking like, what's next for me? And those words came out. So
yeah. And I wonder what it's been like for you to manage maintaining your relationships with Bon Iver and that, as well as this, your whole solo project.
Oh yeah. It's, that's quite easy actually. You know, yeah, it's just part of my job. I think as a musician these days, you wear different hats, and, so I do a lot of touring with Bon Iver, and I tour with my own band, and when I'm not on the road, I'm, you know, producing other people's music or working on my own or just taking time off. So it all works out. And Justin, of course, is quite supportive of all of us doing our own thing. So that's been really awesome of him, for sure.
Yeah. So where do you find those sources of creativity? Do you have a place where you go, your favorite place to write or find that inspiration for your work?
It all depends. You know, I think it's just sort of like, you just sort of chip away at it. And, you know, I have the luxury of working when I want to, and sort of, you know, just kind of waiting till the, you know, something sparks. And so then I go through a lot of phases where sometimes I don't write at all. And then other times I'm, you know, stuff is just happening and flowing. So work a lot at home and bounce ideas off my friends. And I like to be outside a lot, fly fishing and walking. And so I get good ideas out there.
So how do you know when an album is ready? Like, how do you know when it's done?
Great question. It's hard to say. It's kind of a feeling. It's actually one of my favorite parts of working on an album, is when the big picture kind of comes together and you can see the whole thing. That's such an exciting moment. But it's... I don't know. It's really hard to describe besides just a feeling and trusting your instinct, for sure.
Or do you just approach that point where you're like, I cannot think about this anymore. I can't.
Not necessarily, no. But.
But you feel good about it. What do you hope people take away from listening to the new album?
I mean, I hope people, you know, can look at their own lives and use some of those songs or all of them and interpret them in ways in their own life to have meaning. I mean, I think that's one of the most beautiful things about music, is that ability to sort of, you know, learn from it or just feel from it. And, you know, I hope it's about change and it's about loss, and there's some darkness, but there's a lot of hope and light there too. So I hope they sort of, you know, see the full spectrum of feeling and you know, I guess sort of use it as a positive thing that came out of the pandemic as well.
Mm-hmm. And so you're on tour right now for this new album, Break Me Open. Where will the tour take you next?
Yeah, right now we're in Boston. We played here last night, and then we're heading down the coast. So we're doing Holyoke, Massachusetts, then New York and Philly and DC, and then we head back to the Midwest. We'll be in Milwaukee in
next week.
Okay. Yeah. And then we go out on the West Coast in July. So it's been really fun to play these songs. It's really exciting to have new music.
And what's ahead for you after the tour?
And a couple other Bon Iver tours. And, yeah, it's a lot of time on the road this year, but, you know, I guess catching up for not being on the road the last couple of years. And beyond that, eventually I'll work on new music and hopefully have some downtime here at some point.
Yeah. Do you get a chance to stop back home and see your kids in between stops?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. It's not ideal, but, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What's the part you enjoy most about, I know it can be a grind, but what are some of your favorite moments about being on the road and being back in front of a live audience after, you know, so much time?
Yeah. You know, getting on stage and just seeing people that have come out to see you, and even if maybe they're not totally comfortable doing it, you know, they took a chance to come see live music, and just sort of, you know, talk to them after the show and feel that, you know, how special live music is and how important it is. And to hear some of their stories has been really impactful.
Well, Sean Carey, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning and for getting up so early
it's okay.
to be with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Molly.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Sean Carey, a musician from Eau Claire, releasing his first album in more than 4 years. Just ahead, we're going to check in on the latest battle lines in the culture wars, our public schools. I'm Molly Stenz. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. And the song we're listening to is Crestfallen by S. Carey.